Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson, and we're set as usual for our Sunday morning show here in our Harlem and Irving office, which, by the way, is a very, very busy place. We have an interesting guest today that I'm really looking forward to talking with. He's a friend of many, many years and one of the outstanding basketball coaches in the country, Ray Meyer of DePaul. And as you know, they're having a really sensational year. Currently, they won 23 and lost just 2. Now, we have many things to talk about. First, I'd like to mention the fact that, like myself and many of my friends, we're saddened to hear of the death of a good friend of everybody, Lou Malnetti, a prominent restaurant figure in Lincolnwood, who was a great, great sports fan, did a lot of things for a lot of people. He was perhaps the driving force behind the annual Brian Piccolo dinner, which was for a cancer fund, and he'll be missed. And one thing he left was a lot of friends. There wasn't anyone who didn't like Lou Malnetti, so he'll really be missed. I'll be back with our guest, Coach Ray Meyer, in just a moment. Our guest today is a friend of mine of many, many years, Coach Ray Meyer, who is in a happy mood these days. In fact, Sports Illustrated has a wonderful article called Reawakening the Glory. It has to do with a number of eras at DePaul, and Coach Meyer now is in his 36th year there. And you know, this is quite an article, Ray. I really enjoyed it. Sports Illustrated did right by you.
Well, Bob, it's very kind of them to come out and look at us, but I guess I should be grateful to the team because they're the group that are winning, and it's been a reawakening of interest at DePaul because now it used to be when we'd play like Marquette or Notre Dame, they drew the people into our gym. But now when we could play anybody and fill the gym. We're drawing. We got the whole neighborhood and many, many fans in the Chicago area, and I'm just amazed at how many people have seen us on TV and have heard us on radio this year.
You know, Ray, I know as well as you do that recruiting is an important part of any coach's job, whether it's basketball or football or anything else. But the game at Notre Dame, which has to be one of the most exciting games played this year or any other year, what effect did that have on your recruiting program?
Bob, it was it will like go from 0 to 100 if you're going. People had not heard about us nationally for years, and when we were on TV nationally at Notre Dame, it just made kids want to go to DePaul. We got the exposure. Boys that we had talked to before that showed little or no interest in DePaul are now telling us they want to come. And this probably be the first year in recruiting where we will be selective. We will just choose some of the boys instead of they choosing us. So I think that we're going to get 3 or 4 outstanding ball players and boys who have already told us they're coming to DePaul. And, Bob, they're going to make me a good coach.
Well, Ray, that would indicate that even though a lot of writers are calling this your greatest team, you may have even greater teams ahead.
Well, we may be a year or two away from even a better one than this one. I don't know. I think the whole program at DePaul has turned around. We're going to be successful from here on out.
Coach, the title of the article in Sports Illustrated, Reawakening the Glory, is an excellent title, and it seems to divide your career between two things, the Mikan era and the Corzine era. Is that right?
Yes, that's all I hear about lately, and I've been asked so many times to compare George Mikan with Dave Corzine, Bob, and of course that's an era that George played, well, I'll say 30 years ago, 35 years ago, and Dave is playing today, and when George Mikan played, there may have been only 4 or 5 tall men in the game. Now, with Dave Corzine, there are 50 or 60 men playing college ball just as big as he is. So he doesn't dominate the game as George Mikan did. But as you know, everything in athletics today is better because all you have to do is look at the sports, the individual sports. The times in track have all come down. The times in swimming, they're all much better athletes today. And we take out the movies of 30 years ago, and we show them to our kids today, and they look like our gang comedies. The boys today are so much better athletes, it isn't even funny.
Coach, let's take another angle. What about the work that you had to do as coach with Mike and Corzine to bring them along to be as great as Mike was and as Corzine is?
Well, Mikan had to come a lot further than Dave Corzine. Mikan was not very agile or very mobile when he came to DePaul, and he didn't play any high school ball. He was starting from scratch. He had to come a long way. Where Dave Corzine came out of high school, was an all-stater, and he did things in high school that helped his career because against presses in high school, he brought the ball up the floor at 6'10 or 11, and I think that Dave played basketball in high school, in which he was a star, where George didn't. And then when he came on to college, it was more of refining Dave Corzine and teaching George Mikan. And I think that's probably the difference. And I think that Dave is going to go on in the professional ranks and make a great name for himself.
Ray, when it comes to coaching an outstanding athlete, we've just mentioned Mikan and Corzine, how would you divide the percentage of coaching and teaching with the percentage of overcoming faults that a player has developed?
Well, with George Mikan, it was mostly all teaching because he hadn't played that much, and it was easy to teach him a hook shot this way or that because he didn't have bad habits. Now, with Corzine, it was teaching plus the breaking of bad habits. Like, he has a bad habit, but he gets the ball in low, he'll bounce the ball. That's a high school trait. If you bounce the ball in college like that, you generally lose it. So, and bringing the ball down. Dave still brings it down where George held it real high because he was taught from the beginning to do it right. And now you find that you have to, say, unteach their habits. You have to tell them to do different things, how to hold the ball. And with Dave, it was a bigger problem in the sense that he had flaws in his hook shot or something like that, and you'd have to correct it. And in correcting a habit that a boy has done all through his high school career, it takes time. And this is what he had to learn. Like, we taught George to jump right away. Well, Dave in high school didn't jump because he just reached. He was so big and over there. Well, when George was learning the game, we forced him into jumping. Well, now Dave jumps, and he's improved his quickness a lot with hard work, and I think that he's overcoming a lot of the flaws that he had previously, and that he was a little lax defensively. Now he plays better defensive ball. Where with Mike, and you were teaching him right to do it at that time. You didn't have to break any habit. You said, do it, and George was very intelligent. The two things the boys have in common, or young men have in common, is they're very high intellectual boys. They're very good students in the sense that they can do anything they want to do in the classroom. George went on to become a lawyer. Anybody can score 1,450 points on the college boards. That's phenomenal. You know, 1,000 will get you into Harvard or anything. So you know he has an intellect, and I wouldn't want to challenge his intellect.
Coach, for the benefit of the dyed-in-the-wool basketball fans who may be listening to our program today, and I'm sure many of them are because we publicized the fact that you were going to be with us here at Northwest Federal, take us into the back room and tell us how you prepared DePaul for the snake pit at Notre Dame. Now, they refer to that laughingly as a snake pit because they're so hard to beat down there. Did you use a blackboard? What happened in that preparation for that game? What was the strategy?
Bob, if I told you it was so simple, it wouldn't be. In other years, we always prepared the team saying, you're going to go into Notre Dame. You're never going to hear as much noise as you're going to hear at Notre Dame. There, and you're never going to get the abuse or as people are going to jump on you and just ridicule you and try to get your goat under the basket by waving and things of that nature. So we did that for years. And this year we decided, you know, we'd like to get tapes and play a lot of noise and play the Notre Dame victory march when you're shooting and that thing. And I thought, no, why I'd... I just have a feeling that I don't want to make them conscious of the noise. This is a senior team mostly, and they've been there before. So we minimized all the noise, and we told them that the floor is 94 by 50. There are two baskets on each end, and the only people that can beat you are the people that are on the floor, not in the stands. And just don't hear the crowd. Just don't look at them. Just play.
How do you prepare to a defense for a outstanding team like Notre Dame?
Well, we work very...
And once you set a defense up, do they stay with it during the excitement of getting on the floor?
Well, we were set up in three different defenses, Bob, and we knew that we'd have a very difficult time in their man, playing a man-to-man because they are so big. They're as big as a pro team. And when they play a motion-type offense, and with all that movement, you have a very tough time protecting yourself on the defensive board because they got so much movement it's hard to block them out. So we thought we started in a zone or a man-to-man, and we felt if we got the lead, we'd go into a zone and make them play our game where we could get back to the backboard a little better. And we went to a conventional 2-3 zone, but it didn't work that well because that Batten is about 6'11", and he stands way up on the top, and our guards are around 6 foot or 6'3", and he just shoot right over him. We weren't big enough to combat that. So we had practice during the week of what we considered a 4 defense. It's a 1-2-2 zone, so we'd have one man up on Batten all the time and prevent him from getting the ball. So we went from one defense to another until we found out that the 1-2-2 zone was the better defense for us. So we stayed with that, and we were successful with it as long as we had the lead and they couldn't draw us out of the zone. But we dictated the tempo of the game, and this was our strategy. If we felt that if we could dictate the tempo, we could win. So we held the game. We held it in good shape all the way through except the last about 30 seconds of regulation. We had the game won. We gave it away. And then we went into overtime, and we went down 5 points in overtime. And then Notre Dame gave it back to us. But we weren't as generous as they were. We took it.
Well, it had to be one of the greatest games of the year and one of the biggest thrills of your great career.
Bob, no doubt about it. As I said earlier, I didn't believe that the game meant that much until the mail and wires and calls came in from Monday even to the present day, a week or 2 weeks later. I have never received as much mail on any game as on this game. Without exaggeration, we have over 400 wires and letters and maybe 500 phone calls of congratulations on a game. And I never knew the game was that big, but wherever we go, I give you Ed Badger's comment, which was terrific. Ed is, of course, the coach of the Chicago Bulls. He was out at our game one night after the Notre Dame game. It was about 3 or 4 days later, and Ed was talking, and he said, "Gee, Ray, I'm certainly happy you were playing Notre Dame on TV Sunday afternoon." I said, "Why?" And he says, "Well, we were playing Indiana, and we were terrible, and nobody watched our game. They all watched yours, so I'm very happy we're on TV." Ed's a real nice fellow.
Yes, he is a marvelous guy. Our coach today at our Harlem and Irving office is one of the outstanding basketball figures in America, Coach Ray Meyer of DePaul. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We're delighted to have Coach Ray Meyer of DePaul as our guest today. Ray, is it considered official that basketball was started by Dr. Naismith?
Yes, that's what they say. That's a little before my time, though, Bob.
It's even before my time. I was wondering, when you talk about these complicated defenses and so on and so forth, what basketball was like in the beginning?
Well, Bob, the basketball in the beginning was more or less, they just passed the ball around. They didn't move very much. And, you know, they had what they called standing guards, and they didn't have the plays or the movement that we have today. And there's no question about it. The boys of today are so much bigger, more mobile, more agile. They can shoot the ball so much better than the older boys was for several reasons. The equipment is better today, the gym shoes. The ball is molded and it's round. Years ago when we played and all, even in college, we used to test the ball by rolling it on the floor and would hop. They had humps all over. Now you roll the ball and it rolls perfectly. It's round. And you don't have the seams on it where they catch the wind, and your backboards are uniform. Everything is more uniform and standard today than years ago, and consequently it's added to the game.
Ray, what do you recall about the years of the center jump?
Well, that everything in basketball was aimed at the big guy, Bob. When we played in college in my sophomore year, they took out the center jump because they said the big man had an advantage. So they took out the center jump, figuring that they'd take away some of the value of the big man. Then they put in the 10-second rule that they'd have to advance the ball over the mid-court line. Then they had a 6-foot-wide lane that you couldn't stay in 3 seconds because that was giving the big man an advantage. And then they had, I remember Will Chamberlain at Kansas, and we were in a coaches meeting, and Hank Iver from Oklahoma said, why do we keep legislating against the big men when we should coach against it? And then that night we went out and watched Will Chamberlain play against North Carolina with the 6-foot lane, and next day they had a vote unanimously, 12-foot lane, get that big guy further away from the basket. Then they started talking about the big guy was batting the ball away on its downward arc like a goalie. So they said you can't touch the ball on its downward arc. So then they started guiding it in on offense. Then they said you can't touch it on offense. It was interference. But through the years, all the we did was make rules so that the big man would be handicapped or we'd lessen his effectiveness. And all we did was make him a better basketball player because he had to do more to get on the court. So every once the big guys became more valuable instead of less valuable. Yeah. So the men that made the rules helped the big guy.
I was reading in the interesting article about you in Sports Illustrated about a game down south where you were seated between two good coaching friends of mine, the late Adolph Rupp and Johnny Wooden, who gained fame at Purdue and at UCLA. How do you analyze the contribution of these two great figures to the game of basketball?
They have devoted or given so much to basketball. They've given more. There are about four of them, I should say, that have given so much to basketball that they made it a great sport. Adolph Rupp started in down in Kentucky at Dynasty, and you know he won that Southeastern Conference for about 15 or 20 years in a row, and then Everett Case brought basketball to the South by bringing all the Indiana boys down to North Carolina State, and with that you found basketball going south and they start building gyms. Johnny Wooden, when we used to go down with the college all-stars playing the Harlem Globetrotters, we go to Los Angeles to play. They didn't have an indoor place to play. And Wooden, with his phenomenal teams at UCLA and the record he made there, will never be broken. That can never be touched again. He brought in a Rupp, what great defensive play into basketball. Johnny Wooden brought the pressing defenses into basketball. Their contributions were great. And you had Hank Iver who brought in the passing game. You hear the passing game today. Well, when we played Hank Iver back in '40s, he was using the passing game at that time. So many of the things, they run in cycles, but they've been such great coaches. And I'll tell you this, I coached college all-stars, and you got boys from all over the country in various schools and were coached by the various men. When you had a boy from Adolph Rupp, he was so disciplined, he'd run through a big wall. He wouldn't ask why. He just told him what to do, and he did it. His boys, and I used to say that in coaching the college all-stars, I could always tell you what kind of a coach that man was who coached the ball players that I had, because you could tell whether they were receptive, coachable. But anybody that played for the men I mentioned were so receptive.
Yeah. Ray, would you say that Coach Rupp utilize the little man as well as any coach in basketball? He always had those smallish sharpshooters that could hit from anywhere.
Oh, yeah, Tico Akers, Beard, and he had so many of those. Well, his offense was so designed for guard play. They ran those picks, and the guards would be coming off, flying off picks and taking their shots from the floor. He had great floor shooters, always. It didn't have so much power with Grozin, with some of the big guys later in his career, but he didn't have that many great centers. He had great guards. As opposed to Johnny Wooden, he had great centers all the time, and he had good ball players that are always with him. But you talk about that today, and of course, Bobby Knight, when he had his team at Indiana, that team that won the NCAA, in years to come, they may consider that one of the best teams of all time, because I don't remember another college team that ever put five boys in the pro league in the first or second round, and every one of his team. Now, when you put, I judge all the college teams by how many they put in the pro league. Now, we've only put one in about the last 8-10 years. You look at they put one, two, or three in every year. That's remarkable. When you get that kind of material, you're going to win a lot of ball games.
Coach Meyer, what about, you mentioned Hank Iba, a good friend of yours and a good friend of mine. What about his ball control type of game? Do you see much of that anymore?
Well, you're coming into a lot of that now. As I said, it goes in cycles. Dean Smith has come out with the four-corner game.
Yes, I was reading about that.
Yeah, a lot of the teams. Creighton uses that very much now. Wisconsin, Green Bay up there. The Air Force. There are a lot of teams of now using that kind of delayed offense. The reason they use it, Bob, is it kind of equalizes the material and or the talent. You're going to get one shot, and we're going to get one shot. And if you make many mistakes on defense, we're going to get a lot of easy shots. So they play that way, and there's a lot more ball control in the game of basketball now than there was 5 to 10 years ago. That's starting to come back again, and with all this ball control, you'll probably see in the next year or two a 24-second or a 30-second clock, because the pros have the 24-second clock where they won't hold the ball all night. And I think that the colleges are going to have to come to that. I know Wooden was wanted that years ago, because when he had the great teams at UCLA, he'd play these people and they'd stand out at midcourt and hold the ball. Well, they were going to hold the score down. And if you play ball control, you get lucky, and the other team makes a few mistakes, you're in the ball game. But if you just run and shoot with them, and see, basketball game is a game of percentages. If you run up and down and shoot with the talented, they got more talent, better shooters, they're going to kill you. So a lot of people hold the ball.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him at our Harlem and Irving office, is one of the outstanding basketball coaches in the country, Ray Meyer of DePaul, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today at our Harlem and Irving office is Coach Ray Meyer of DePaul, whose great team now has won 23 and lost only 2, and they look like they're headed for a big tournament here at the end of the year. I was talking about the article about you in Sports Illustrated. They also have an interesting article about Mr. Byers and the NCAA.
Oh, well, Mr. Byers is having his trouble with
What is that all about?
Well, there was supposedly some illegal recruiting tactics of Jerry Tarkanian out at Las Vegas, Nevada. And they sanctioned Las Vegas, and they wanted Jerry was supposed to be relieved of his duties for a full year. And he got an injunction in court whereby that he could coach this year. Now, the senator from Nevada has taken it up into Congress there, and they're trying to put some restrictions on the NCAA, and Walter Byers is going the other way, and he can't see the restrictions. And so they're going to go to court and fight it out, and I don't know who's going to win. I kind of like the NCAA's powers, because I've run into them. They're powerful.
Yes, they certainly are powerful. I know that you played just last week at the Air Force Academy. You were telling us a little bit about the marvelous athletic setup they have out there.
Bob, I never have seen anything, and I think I've been in 90% of the gyms from one side of the country to the other. I mean athletic facilities, but they seem to have the finest. And I just couldn't believe walking, when you come in, they have a a little gate that you have to go through, and it's 26,000 acres of property right up into the mountains, right off Pikes Peak, and then everything is on a plateau there, and every car that comes in, they have a man at the gate salutes every car, and they have an MP wagon there. You go in and you can look at their chapel. It probably is the greatest thing in the country. You have an organ that costs about $1.5 million, a Catholic church, a Jewish church, a Protestant church, and, with stained glass windows, just gorgeous. You can't go near the dormitories. They're built right inside of a mountain. How would you like to wake up in the morning and look out at Pikes Peak or look out all over the country like that? And, we went into their gym, and I, of course, that what I was very much interested in. I walked in, and I saw about as wide as this bank a foyer. They have concession stands in there, and right in the middle, right down, they have tables and chairs where you can sit down and eat your food. You go and you turn left, and they have a basketball gymnasium that probably seats about 12,000. It's just gorgeous, all seats. So it's just beautiful. You turn right and you got a hockey ring that seats about 10 or 12,000, and they got a, then you go down into their locker rooms. You could eat off their floors. They have a training room that, you could put our whole gym in. And they got sunken whirlpools. You can walk right in up to your neck in those whirlpools. You have stairs going in. You have, I can't believe the equipment and the weight equipment they have. Then you go to the Fayed building. You got every imaginable thing you can get. You got an underground passage that goes right into the gymnasium, and their buildings are just spotless. They're beautiful. If we had that set up, boy, would I love a set up like that.
Ray, they must be restricted, however, with their recruiting program.
Oh, yes. First of all, they have a height limitation of 6'8", and you have to be very intelligent to get in. Also, you have to make a commitment upon graduation. I think you have to stay in the Air Force for so many years. But it is such a beautiful setting that you just look at that place and you say, man, oh man, well, I like to take that back and put it in my pocket and bring it back to Chicago.
Coach, as you analyze these two end-of-the-year tournaments, what is the difference? One is preferable to the other, right?
No question about it, Bob. Maybe 20, 25 years ago, the NIT was the big tournament. And that's the National Invitational Tournament in Madison Square Garden. Today, the NCAA is so desirable money-wise. If you go in and... well, let's say 2 years ago we were in the tournament. We went two games only. We got $72,000 or $73,000 above expenses, and now that would be the same two games would be over $100,000. With the price of tickets that have gone up, with television contracts going up, and radio going up, these things are getting so big. If you go to the finals of that tournament.
Let's hope you do.
You probably get about $300,000. If you went to the finals of the NIT, you may get $25,000. No, there's a difference.
Lots of luck to you, Ray, and thanks so much for being with us today. You've been a great credit to the game and to DePaul, and everybody's pulling for you. Everybody's proud of you.
Thank you, Bob. I hope we do well so that we can bring something back to Chicago.
Our guest today at our Harlem and Irving office has been one of the outstanding basketball coaches in the country, Coach Ray Meyer of DePaul. Remember, excitement today on the tube, by the way. You can see the game between Marquette and Notre Dame. That game is going to be played at South Bend, and it's on this afternoon at 3 o'clock. So whatever you do, have a nice day. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.